All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are discussing the possible trade-up scenarios for the Atlanta Falcons in round one of the 2018 NFL Draft, as well as some alternative selections they may decide to pull the trigger on at pick 26.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, welcome back to another week of Locked On Falcons. I am your humble host, Aaron Freeman, founder of FalFans.com, one of the longest running Falcon websites on the internet. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at FalFans. And of course, I am also the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Now, we've discussed numerous times on this podcast, on previous episodes, that the Falcons are probably all in on going D-tackle with the first round pick in this year's draft that is now 11 days away. But everything seems to be pointing in the direction of the Falcons going all in at the top of this draft with a defensive tackle. And it has caused many people, including myself, that think the Falcons are going to wind up trading up from their pick at number 26 overall to facilitate their selection of the D-tackle of their choice. So we're going to take a deeper dive into those potential circumstances that would prompt that trade up on today's episode. You know, I've said before that I think the Falcons have sort of put themselves in a situation where they kind of have to wind up with one of the big four D tackles, whether that's Vita Vea, Daron Payne, Taven Bryan, or Maurice Hurst, at the top of this draft to sort of consider it a success. And I think that puts more pressure on them to have to move up. I thought initially, you know, this episode I was probably going to wind up saving for the week of the draft to sort of have all the information that we've condensed over this offseason into one sort of final wrap up. But I think, again, with, you know, less than 2 weeks, a week and a half away from the draft, I don't expect anything to occur over these next 10 to 11 days that's going to change the arithmetic, as they say, on this. And so I think it's worthwhile to start off our week, you know, a little bit ahead of time to discuss these things. But before we do that, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the alternative options the Falcons may have with their first round pick if they aren't, as I think, going to be all in on a defensive tackle. And so while I think there's a very low probability that the Falcons won't take a D tackle in the first round, let's explore some of the alternative options that they have. We've had multiple guests come on in recent weeks and try to, you know, I've ask the question, be like, what is the Falcons' second biggest need? No one really has a firm answer. And I think that sort of leads a little bit to why the team may wind up trading up, but I'll get to that later on in the episode. You know, I think if no one else is going to provide me the answer, then I will do my darndest to come up with the correct answer, as I often do on this very special Locked On Falcons podcast. You guys that regularly listen know that you come here seeking truth, and I shall provide it to you today on the Locked On Falcons podcast. Okay, enough preamble. Let's get into this. I think looking at the Falcons draft plans, and again, I've said this a number of times, I don't really know what's going to happen because it's so wide open relative to most years. Most years, it's like, okay, they have one prevailing need. They have some secondary needs. This year is kind of different where they have one prevailing need and not really any sort of specific secondary needs. There are areas and directions I think they will go, but it's not as if there's a pressing need for them really other than sort of filling out depth at certain positions like wide receiver, like running back, like linebacker, along the defensive line, maybe cornerback, maybe safety, maybe tight end, maybe offensive line, et cetera, maybe quarterback even. And so it's sort of up in the air, and I think it's made it hard to come up with an alternative option other than a D-tackle with their first-round pick, but I'm going to try today. I think when we look at possibilities on offense, I think there's probably two positions where the Falcons could realistically in some plausible way go at pick 26 in the event. And again, all of this is speaking, let's say a scenario where the Falcons don't trade up, and they say, you know, keeping that mid-round pick, that third-round pick, or whatever it is, to stay put at 26, we can still get a good D-tackle in round two or round three, and we'll just take the best player available in round one. And I think in terms of who that best player available, I think on offense, there's probably only two options. It sort of limits their scope. I think at the wide receiver position, I think it would be DJ Moore, the wide receiver out of Maryland. I think up front on the offensive line, I think it might be Isaiah Wynn. It was a player that we've talked about quite a bit earlier this offseason. We talked about once the Falcons signed Brandon Fusco, it sort of moved the offensive line off the table, given that they already have enough bodies there to make it through this season. And any high premium picks, you know, in the first four rounds that you use at that position is potentially pushing a guy, particularly a guy like Sean Harlow, off the roster to the point where you basically just wasted a fourth round pick a year ago that I don't think the Falcons really want to put themselves into that situation. So I don't necessarily know if they're going to use a high pick on an interior offensive lineman or even an exterior offensive lineman, even though they've worked out a number of offensive tackles, just because offensive tackles typically, you know, aren't necessarily guys that are going to come. Or after the second round, if you're taking offensive tackle, you're probably not taking a guy that's going to play right away. That's what I'll say. Going back to DJ Moore at the wide receiver position, I think DJ Moore is unique in this draft because he possesses the explosiveness that the Falcons would look for at that position. He has that vertical potential to come in and fill that Taylor Gabriel role as the guy opposite Julio Jones, because you know Sanu's not that guy. You know Justin Hardy's not that guy that can come in and take the top off of the defense. I think the other thing that DJ Moore has over other potential options, for late first-round options like a Calvin Ridley or Cortland Sutton or an Anthony Miller, is he has that return skills. He's dabbled as a punt returner this past year. He dabbled as a kick returner the previous year. So even if he doesn't necessarily come in right away and carve out that number three wide receiver role, which I think will be harder pressed than some people think, because Justin Hardy has so much more experience. And again, I think too often people underestimate how big a jump it is to the pros, particularly for positions like wide receiver, where traditionally rookies don't come in right away because you don't understand the offense. You don't understand what you have to do in terms of adjusting your routes to coverage. You don't have the refinement. Justin Hardy has 3 years in this offense. He's worked with Matt Ryan a ton. He knows how to run routes. Like, there's just no way a rookie is going to come in and beat him in a fair battle for a roster spot or for, you know, a depth chart role. The only reason that a rookie would play over Justin Hardy is due to injury, or just simply because that guy is so immensely talented that the Falcons are just going to have to find a way to get that guy on the field. And there really isn't a wide receiver like that in this draft class. There is no sort of Corey Davis. There is no sort of John Ross in this class. The closest probably being is a guy like DJ Moore. And so I think he would be the only candidate that the Falcons would seriously consider at pick 26 at the wide receiver position. But even then, I think that's more like a plan D. The same thing goes to Isaiah Wynn. I think the benefit that Isaiah Wynn has over some of the other interior offensive linemen like a James Daniel or a Will Hernandez, not only is the fit in the scheme, but also the fact that he is dealing with a shoulder injury that has limited him this offseason, didn't work out of the combine, didn't work out of his pro day, due to having shoulder surgery, similar to what we saw with Tack McKinley last year. I think because of the success of Tack, the Falcons won't be as afraid of that shoulder injury, because I think it's the same surgery, torn labrum, that I think Vic Beasley also dealt with in his rookie season as well. And because of that shoulder injury, the Falcons won't feel as compelled, oh, that guy has to come in right away and compete for a starting spot. They wouldn't have any issue redshirting Isaiah Wynn for a year and sort of plugging him in as the replacement for Andy Levitre in 2019 at that left guard position and giving him the time that he needs. And in that situation, I think the Falcons would feel like, okay, well, Isaiah Wynn, we can keep Sean Harlow as the 10th offensive lineman. But in that situation, the Falcons would have to feel pretty certain that they're planning on keeping 10 offensive linemen. Because I don't think you're cutting Sean Harlow a year after you just drafted him in the fourth round. That would be just not good team management. And I think Sean Harlow, assuming that he picks up where he left off at the end of last summer, will certainly play at a high enough level where you can confidently say he should be able to make the roster. So I think Wynn is probably the exception. I don't think the Falcons would think that way with Daniels or Will Hernandez. I wouldn't necessarily close the door on those two guys, but I just don't think they would be at the top of their lists. I'll talk a little bit more about some additional positions that the Falcons may draft, but because we're talking draft, of course I have to plug the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with hosts Trevor Sikkema and John Ledyard, who are doing their mock draft war room series where they're going pick by pick, talking to various experts and insiders for each NFL team throughout the first round to get an idea of where teams will go. And go check that out. Subscribe on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So I think, you know, we talked about the offensive players. I think defensively, I think the one position the Falcons would seriously consider at pick 26 is cornerback. I know that they've been sniffing around some of the linebackers like Rashawn Evans and Leighton Vander Esch. I think I wouldn't necessarily say there's no chance the Falcons draft those guys, but I just think given how much talent the Falcons have already at the linebacker position, given sort of the untapped potential that they have at that position right now, because you look at Deion Jones, you look at Devondre Campbell, you look at Duke Riley, all three of those guys are really sort of scratching the surface of their abilities. Right now, we've only really seen, like, you know, towards the end of the last season, like the last five games, Deion Jones played amazingly last year, but we haven't really seen him reach his ceiling, because you hope the ceiling is playing that way in the way he played in those last five games of the regular season in 2017 for, you know, presumably 12 or 16 games in future years. The same thing with Devondre Campbell, who I think really only played at a high level for maybe like four games last year. You know, if you were ranking him on a 10-point scale with five being an average starter, I think Devondre Campbell for about four or five games was maybe a six. And then for most of the season, he was a five. And I feel like there's more untapped potential with Devondre Campbell. You guys know, regular listeners know, I have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with Devondre Campbell, because I think sometimes when he's playing like a five and occasionally a four, it's very frustrating. But you see that potential. I think the same thing goes with Duke Riley. If he's a four right now, I think the expectation, similar to what Campbell was and occasionally was last year, can make that jump to a five or a six this upcoming season and into a seven or eight and beyond, just because of his immense talent. And so I don't feel like the Falcons will feel as pressured to take a linebacker high like a Rashawn Evans or a Leighton Vander Esch. I think with those guys, even though certainly given where those guys are going to be drafted this year, they are more talented than arguably any of our linebackers, Deion Jones included, I don't really feel like the Falcons, given that they don't need to necessarily draft one of those guys early and to get that sort of seven or eight player. Like, you look at Rashawn Evans, he's a fantastic player that is certainly deserving of being a top 25 pick in this draft. But I just don't think he's going to bring that much to the table in addition to what you hope as a coaching staff, as an organization, that you can try to get out of Campbell or Riley next to Deion Jones this year. So I don't feel like the Falcons, like, they would have to be utterly convinced that Rashawn Evans is going to hit that peak in order to pull the trigger on that guy. And Vander Esch is a guy that probably I wouldn't necessarily put a first round grade on, but I certainly would put a high second round grade on, and certainly wouldn't begrudge a team that will roll the dice on his athleticism and upside in round one, including the Falcons. But it's one of those things where it's like you could probably fit him in as a strong side linebacker, but I don't know if he's going to bring a whole lot more to that position than Campbell is going to. But hopefully Campbell will bring this upcoming season. I know he's got superior, he's a much better athlete than Campbell is. It's certainly tested like one. You know, it's kind of night and day, and Devondre Campbell is certainly no slouch in the athleticism department. But it is one of those things where I just don't know where the value is at that pick, because you're not getting a guy, potentially assuming that Campbell doesn't, you know, drop off in any way, you're not getting a guy that's going to play all three downs right away. You'll get a guy that will dabble on in nickel situations like we saw with Duke Riley early last season. But unless you're convinced that guy's going to come in and bring so much more on those passing downs than what Campbell and Jones currently do, I don't see where the value is to drafting that guy. And that goes somewhat to what the Falcons have historically done under Dan Quinn, which is target guys that are every down players. They don't really target two down players. You can argue that none of the defensive players that they drafted in 3 years are really two down guys. They're all guys that even if they didn't necessarily come in right away and carve out roles in the nickel, like we saw with Duke Riley, certainly that was where their bread was buttered and where you thought the immense potential was. Same thing with Grady Jarrett, who was a pressure guy, and tackle killing, Vic Beasley certainly weren't known for their great run-stopping abilities in college. So it's one of those things where I think you can look at Vander Esch and Evans and see like, oh yeah, they give you definitely plus value in run support, but I don't know if they're giving you that same value in terms of coverage potential over the current linebackers in the Falcons have. And so that's one of the reasons why I don't really think that they would be guys that would be firmly on the Falcons' radar. But I think one of the reasons why they've brought both of those guys in to work them out is to discover those things and see like, okay, Rashawn Evans, you played at Alabama. You play this matchup zone defense where basically if a receiver runs into your zone, then you slide out and cover him in man coverage. But can you play at a high level in man coverage? We saw this a couple of years ago with Keanu Neal, who barely played man coverage during his days at Florida. Falcons worked him out and said, okay, you can play man coverage, even though you probably only spent like 25 snaps your final year at Florida doing that. And so, you know, maybe they come out of that workout thinking, okay, Rashawn Evans has a ton of untapped potential there. But it's one of those situations where I don't think, you know, unlike it was 2 years ago with Keanu Neal, where, you know, who was your top strong safety at the time, Robinson Therese. I think with Campbell and Riley already on the roster, you don't necessarily feel as compelled to draft that player at that position, even if you think he does give you the upside. So linebacker is a position I'm very iffy on, but I do think there's a slim chance maybe, but I would doubt it. Cornerback, I think, is a position where the Falcons would target just because you know you're going to get a guy that's going to come in and be that three-down player because defensive backs all play on every down. You know, we talk about cornerback a lot. It's not a pressing need because you do have guys like Brian Poole. You do have decent depth with Bethel and Blee, Ray Wilson, and Leon McFadden, NFL experience depth. So it's not a necessarily pressing need, but it is one of those positions that, unlike, say, with Campbell and Riley, I don't think you can look at Brian Poole and see him as a guy that has loads of untapped potential because he's frankly a low-level athlete compared to his position group, and you've probably arguably seen the best of Brian Poole coming in his rookie season when I think he was the highest graded rookie cornerback on Pro Football Focus's grades. And you saw that production dip last season again. And I don't say that to knock Brian Poole, because I think Brian Poole is a really valuable player for the Falcons, but I see Brian Poole in terms of his ideal role in Atlanta, not necessarily as a third corner, because you're going to have situations where, you know, presumably when the Falcons play some of these better NFC teams in the playoffs, they're going to be facing guys like Cameron Meredith and Nelson Aguilar and Randall Cobb and whatnot in the slot. I don't know if you look at Brian Poole going up in those matchups and saying, oh yeah, Brian Poole, he's got that locked down. Like you look at whenever you see Trufant or Alfred go up against a quality wide receiver that's not named Mike Evans or Mike Thomas, you feel pretty good about that matchup. And I think with Brian Poole, again, not to knock him because I think he's very valuable, I think his ideal role is a dime, as a six DB. And because of his versatility to play in the slot, that he can dabble on the outside. He dabbled a little bit there more last year than probably people think. He can play single high safety. He can play in the box because he's such a good run defender. And you can sort of use him in his blitzing ability. You can sort of use him as a strong safety in the same way that you use kind of Keanu Neal in that way. And I think that versatility makes him a really valuable player for the Falcons. But I don't necessarily know if he's going to be the high-level cornerback ever that you're really going to feel really good about his ability to go up against, you know, high-level slot receivers like an Aguilar or somebody along those lines in the future. And so I think ideally you want to get another cornerback, whether that's an outside guy that's going to push a guy like Alford or Trufant to the slot, or another high-level slot guy that has some ability to play outside as well. I think you want to get that guy and then use Poole and give that versatility that you can potentially have to flexibility to match up with a wide variety of defense. If you want to, you know, when we play the Rams, we played nickel 100% of the time, or really we played not nickel 100% of the time. We play nickel or dime 100% of the time in the playoffs because the Rams are almost exclusively a three wide receiver offense. They led the NFL last year in terms of personnel packages, according to sharpfootballstats.com, that featured three or more wide receivers with 84%. Then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have a team like Chicago who only uses those multiple receiver packages on 42% of the plays. And that's one of the wide disparities between the NFL. And that's one of the differences I would personally argue, difference between the value of a quarterback and a wide receiver. You have flexibility offensively. That if you don't want to use multiple wide receivers, you don't have to. You can play 12 personnel, you can play 21 personnel, and just stick to two wide receivers like the Bears did, or like the Patriots did, who only use those multiple receiver sets on like 48% of their plays. You can choose to do that. You don't really have a choice on defense, so you need to have three good corners so that you have the flexibility to play the Rams as well as the Bears. And I think with having a pool, because of his versatility, he can play to be just as effective against the Rams as he can be against the Bears, because I don't feel like you're losing a whole lot if you're using him in the box as sort of a pseudo dime linebacker, corner, slot corner type of guy. I think in a lot of ways, you know, the thing, and again, this is why I'm not down on Brian Poole. I just think you can upgrade that, specifically the coverage abilities. But I think what Poole kind of is for this Falcons defense is a poor man's Tyrann Mathieu. And so if you can use him in a variety of roles that accentuate his skill sets, but doesn't necessarily expose maybe some of the bigger weaknesses of his skill set, which is, you know, matching up against a 6'3 slot receiver like a Cameron Meredith or a 6'4 slot receiver like a Devin Funchess. You know, that's, you know, for a 5'9" guy, that's not necessarily ideal. Or putting him against a Nelson Agholor who runs at like a 4'4", and Brian Poole's, you know, running in the low 4'5s and mid 4'5s. So it's one of those things where you're not putting him in a position where he's sort of at a disadvantage. So I think cornerback is a possibility, and given the value of this draft with guys like Mike Hughes and Isaiah Oliver and Jaire Alexander and Carlton Davis potentially being, you know, all of them potentially being available at that pick 26, I think any one of those guys makes a lot of sense for the Falcons, especially guys like Hughes, Alexander, and Oliver, who all have experience returning kicks and punts in college. So even if they're not necessarily coming in right away and leapfrogging Brian Poole in a similar way that you don't expect a wide receiver to leapfrog Justin Hardy, you can still get value out of those guys right away on special teams and whatnot. So to me, that makes a lot of sense. At pick 26, it makes the most sense of any potential move that the Falcons could make at that position, just because of the value of the position as well as the value of the quality of the players potentially available. So, to summarize, I think, you know, it's DJ Moore, Zay Wynn, or a cornerback is basically the alternatives that the Falcons have at pick 26. And we'll move on in just a bit to talk about the possible trade-up scenarios. But I want to remind you guys to check out Matt Williamson, host of the Locked On NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about the trade-up scenarios. And, you know, this is really just more guessing on my part. But I think it's going to be a similar situation with what we saw with Tack McKinley last year. And we knew that certain pass rushers were going to go early in draft, like Miles Garrett and Solomon Thomas. It was really sort of where that next glut of pass rushers would go at some point in the first round, middle of the first round, later in the first round. And we saw Derek Barnett go at pick 14. And then I think the sort of draft pick that prompted the Falcons to move up when they did was when Charles Harris went 22 to Miami. And I think with Dallas and Pittsburgh sitting in front of them, the Falcons were in a situation where they were like, we need to move up to make sure we get our guy. Now, had the Falcons been in the situation where they saw Tack McKinley, Taco Charlton, and TJ Watt equally, then they probably would have sat there at pick 31 and said, you know, we'll just take whoever's left available. But because they probably had a much higher grade, you know, hindsight suggests that this is strongly the case. They had a much higher grade on Tack McKinley, and understandably so. They went up and make sure they got the best guy that was left available, and they wound up jumping up, you know, to pick 26 with Seattle in order to make that trade. And I think that you'll see similar circumstance, because I think really we kind of know a D tackle is probably going to go in the top 15. We think it's going to be Vita Vea. I'm thinking somewhere in that 8 to 13 range, where the 49ers, Raiders, Dolphins, Bills, and Redskins are picking, presumably if the Bills wind up trading up as we all think they do, where they trade up is going to determine that. I think if particularly with Cleveland, if Cleveland trades back with them from 4 to 12, then they're certainly in the market for a D-tackle. I don't know about any of the other teams picking in the top five, like the Giants or the Broncos are necessarily going to be in the market for a D-tackle at that pick. But I do, my expectation is Vea is going to come off the board somewhere in that 8 to 13 range. There's a decent chance I think Maurice Hurst might go that high if teams are good on his the heart issue. And there are certain teams picking in that range that I think prefer more of a pass rusher like a Maurice Hurst to a more of a run defender like a Vita Vea. But my expectation is Vea will go somewhere in that top 13, in that 8 to 13 range, and will probably be the only D-tackle taken that high. I think then what's going to be the interesting thing is similar to what we saw with Charles Harris. It's going to be when that next D-tackle goes is going to really sort of determine when and where the Falcons look to trade up. Because I think once that whoever that next D-tackle is, whether it's Brian, whether it's Payne, whether it's Hurst, the Falcons will then feel in the same situation as they were with Tack McKinley. Whoever goes off the board of the remaining two, they're going to say, okay, this is the guy that we like over the others, you know, and we're going to go up and get him. And I personally think the Falcons wouldn't be upset with any of those three guys. So that's one of the reasons why I'm not necessarily pegging it to be one specific guy that they'll trade up to get. So I think, you know, they probably, there is an order to them, but it's anybody's guess. My guess would be Maurice Hurst one, Brian two, and then Payne three. That's my guess, but I really have no idea. So I think where that second D tackle goes, I think it's probably going to be in the 17 to 20 range, where you have teams like the Chargers, the Seahawks, the Cowboys, and the Lions picking. And I think that really sort of represents the upper echelon of where the Falcons are going to be willing to trade up. I think 16, the Baltimore, is probably the highest they would go to try to leapfrog that group. Because the Chargers have a D-tackle need, the Seahawks have a D-tackle need, the Cowboys and Lions, of course, have D-tackle needs. Now, my personal opinion as a side note, I honestly, if I was betting, I would think probably only one D-tackle goes in that range if I was betting. But I think the Falcons sitting at pick 26 are going to be like, well, if say the Chargers take, you know, Daron Payne at 17 or something like that, then the Falcons are going to want to feel, okay, let's trade up with Seattle to make sure we get Tape and Brian, because we don't want to risk the fact that both Brian and Hurst or whoever is gone off the board by the time we get to 26. Because I think, you know, depending on who trades back with Buffalo, that's a team at 22 that may be looking for a D-tackle, particularly if it's Cleveland. I don't know if any other teams, I don't think Cincinnati, New England, Carolina, or Tennessee would be looking at D-tackles, but you never know. So I feel like that 18 spot is the sweet spot for the Falcons straight up. They traded with Seattle last year. They know the organizations know each other. I think because the Falcons and Cowboys have had this sort of history of leapfrogging one another, like we did that last year with Tack reportedly because the Cowboys really coveted Tack and we wanted to get ahead of them to make sure we got Tack. And they did it, what, 4 years ago with DeMarcus Lawrence. So reportedly, the Falcons really liked DeMarcus Lawrence. They traded up to get him, and we wound up settling for Rashid Hageman. In both instances, you can argue, and again, I don't want to, you know, close the door on Taco Charlton, but obviously Hageman didn't quite work out for us, and Charlton, of the top pass rushers in the last year's draft class, you know, did not perform to a very high level. And so it's one of those situations where I don't feel like the Falcons and Cowboys, or not to say there's bad blood between them, but I feel like neither organization, given those circumstances, are going to look to do favors for the other one in terms of facilitating a trade up. I think the Cowboys, you know, now that they cut Dez Bryant, are probably more likely in the market for a wide receiver. I kind of think Seattle's more likely in a market for a skill position player on offense. I think they want people like the Falcons in particular to think that they want they really covet Taven Bryan. But I think given some of the offseason moves that they've made, in the presence of some day two picks that they've made the last 2 years and Jerron Reed and Nazaire Jones, I think that they're sort of in a situation where they wouldn't necessarily pull the trigger on a first round D tackle. But again, I don't know if the Falcons are going to be as willing to call their bluff as I am sitting here where I have no stake in the game. So I do feel like if the Falcons do trade up, it's probably, if I was betting, it's probably going to be the 18 with Seattle. That makes the most sense. At that point, if the Chargers do take a D-tackle at 17, the second D-tackle in the draft, and the Falcons can sort of move up and get their guy Even if they're in some certain scenario where there's two D tackles that go in the top 15, I do think then at that point the Falcons would still trade up around that pick 18 to go out and get their guy with Seattle. Seattle doesn't have any picks on the second day of the draft, and you look at the possible trade, past trades, you look at the Falcons trade back in 2013 when we moved up from what was it? We moved up from 30 to 22 to get Trufant. We gave up a third and a sixth. That was eight spots. You saw in 2014, the following year, the Saints moved up from 27 to 20 with the Cardinals and gave up a third to get Brandon Cooks. So it's clear that the third round pick is probably going to be the value that the Falcons will have to give up, similar to what we saw with Tack last year. Maybe there's an additional late round picks. I know that Seattle has a bunch of fifths and sevenths, and so the teams can sort of finagle sort of like late round compensation, you know, like you take a fifth, we take a seventh, or whatever the case may be to sort of sweeten the pot. But basically the bottom line is probably a third round pick is going to have to be given up. And that makes a lot of sense for Seattle because they don't have a day two pick. And I'm sure they would love to move back to 26, still get the offensive skill position player that they actually covet and get a third round pick in that situation. So that's sort of the trade that makes the most sense to me. I think, you know, while I have been very public on this podcast and vocal on Twitter as well, that I'm not necessarily a fan of trading up. I think giving up assets is generally a poor strategy long term. And the Falcons have, in my opinion, been a little bit too easy with giving up those assets. But at the same time, I do feel like because of their team's success, because of their ability to build, and because they don't have a pressing second need, that they can sort of afford to give up that third round pick to make sure that they get the D tackle of their choice, given that they don't necessarily need to get a guy, you know, they don't need to get another starter. Like, and so they can be in a situation picking at pick 58, similar to what we saw last year where they were picking what, like 63, and they moved back to 75 and picked up like two fifths in the process. I could see the Falcons doing something similar where they're picking at 58 because they don't have another pressing need. Unless, you know, maybe wide receiver, maybe cornerback, I think are the two most likely positions at that spot. No, not a two-down run defending defensive tackle like a B.J. Hill. But I think because, again, as I said earlier, you have Brian Poole, you have Justin Hardy, so it's not a pressing need at that position. You're just really sort of more supplementing your depth than necessarily getting a guy that's going to come in right away and carve out a significant role. You can afford to move back at that point in the draft, assuming that there isn't a run at either one of those positions, and feel like you can still get a good player in the top of round three or in the middle of round three at those spots, a Quentin Meeks or Dante Pettis or somebody along those lines, and still be good. And pick up, you know, a couple of day three picks in the process, in the fourth or fifth round or whatever, to sort of supplement and still be able to address your depth in serious ways at various other position groups like linebacker and D-tackle. You know, that D-tackle position, you look at, you know, assuming the Falcons get that three technique that they covet in round one, trading up for him or staying put, you know, the value of a one technique nose tackle that's going to come in and basically take a Tava Rubens role doesn't merit a second round pick because that player is going to play, you know, less than 30% of the snaps. And certainly as a rookie, you know, Tava Rubens played, 15 to 20 snaps a game last year, you know, and the rookie's probably not going to have a bigger role than that. And so what is that value to you? Is that worth a second round pick? Not really. Particularly if that guy doesn't have the potential to be a every down player as a pass rusher. And so I think really if you're looking for a two down run stopper, that's really a third or fourth round value at best. And so you can sort of wait. And I think there's going to be plenty of those types of players available on day three of this draft, with the Deidrin Sanats and the Foley Fadakasis and maybe even a B.J. Hill available that late in the draft, among several others that you can sort of draft and feel comfortable with sort of filling that Rubin role. And that's not necessarily a pressing need. So I do feel like the Falcons are in a unique position where they can trade up. And so, you know, in my best Dave Chope impression, I'm going to sit here and say that they're probably going to wind up trading up. And it all seems to point that way. The hope is that they will not, you know, they're putting out these sort of indicators that, oh, like, you know, we really like the depth of this class. And I think that's part of it, is sort of not be put in a leverage position where teams are like, oh yeah, you want to wait on this D tackle class, and, you know, we're going to milk every single draft pick out of you that we could possibly can. And I think that's really why the Falcons are putting that out there. But it is also somewhat true. I think this is a deep D tackle class. So it doesn't feel like they need to bet the farm to move up. You know, if they have to give up more than a third and a sixth in this situation, I think that's a little too rich for them. So we'll see what happens. And if that happens, then I think, you know, there's a decent chance that they might go corner or you know, Isaiah Wynn or DJ Moore in round one and wait and see who's available there at pick 58 in round two, and getting a guy that's more of a pass rusher, like a Nathan Shepard, than a guy like a BJ Hill or somebody like that. So we'll see what happens. I appreciate you guys listening. If you want to provide your feedback, give your thoughts on what the Falcons could or should or will do with their first round picks and possible trade-up scenarios, I am all ears. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. If it's podcast-related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast-related, of course, it's easier just to send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. You can also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. The email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And you can also leave a comment on lockedonfalcons.com or falcfans.com, where the show is posted daily. So I appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll be back Wednesday with some more insight on some of the top D tackles in this draft class. And we have some more in store with you draft-related content later in the week as well. So look forward to that, and I will see you then. And until then, stay locked on, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.